Kate, the recording is in progress.
Keep on losing my hair. Keep on losing my hair. That's not true. I just am really focused on my female pattern baldness right now. But it's okay because I'm sure everybody I went to high school with has it too. Because we all drank water from under the power lines. Because it was the best time to drink water from the power lines. Ryan's getting up and walking across that screen. Oh, God, look at that ass. So useless. And also, I had a really great conversation with Gabby this morning.
Hi, Gabby.
Gabby and I were like, why do we get so mad at what people are doing, what yoga teachers usually or fitness influencers are doing that are friends of ours, former friends of ours, acquaintances, what have you? Why do we get so enraged? Why does anyone get enraged? I mean, and then we were talking about it and we're like, oh, because it's a performance and we forget it's a performance, or it's a performance and we don't like it. We don't like the script. We don't like the direction the characters are going. We don't like feigned vulnerability, all that shit. And then I was like, yeah, I think that really is it. It's just bad writing. You know, it's like, I don't, stop yeah. selling. I just, So here we are. Tonight, I celebrate my love for you.
This is an all-musical episode, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. I apologize, but I'm not sorry.
No, I hope no one was asking for an apology.
You ever had that thing where you just chew the inside of your mouth until your mouth is like a raw, open wound?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I just wanted to corner you into saying it. So I turned 40.
Birthday.
Yeah, no, it's not about that anymore. It's about my rightness. This episode, I'm just fucking right because I'm older. I've decided, like, with my partner, fiance, whatever the fuck. They said something to me about something and I was like, no, I've seen more and therefore I'm right.
100%.
And they were like, it's like 1,000 days. I was like, you suck my dick. I am right.
How many times a week do you tell your significant other to suck your
dick? Like at least three.
Okay.
At least three. Pleasure me orally.
I think you should just walk around in life just saying it just like that in sporadic intervals.
I just want to make the neighbors a little bit more uncomfortable, which I am working on with my nudity. They're like, oh, look, oh.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? It's not like showmanship. It's laziness. I don't.
Yeah, you're not putting on a show, really.
There's no joy for me. Just like except that I don't have to lean over and like close the blinds. That's sure. The joy. It's not bending over. Ryan, there's a lot to talk about, and I don't know where to start. So I'm going to start with this.
Okay.
Your life is not a commercial.
My life or a proverbial human's life?
I want you to look long and hard and ask yourself if your life is a commercial. What are you selling? Do you have to? And if you have to, by all means, go on and do it, but call it what it is, a commercial. and that you're doing it, you know, to keep food on the table. But if you don't have to do it to keep food on the table, what are you doing? This is just an exercise of narcissism. And you know what? I can't fit in the pants you're selling me anyway, so go fuck yourself. And the pants are ugly. I don't want to see matchy fucking yoga wear. What are you doing? This is not the 80s. Matchy high-necked sports bra with high-waisted fucking pink pants and secure pockets does not make me want to part with money. It doesn't make you look like a put together fucking adult either. It makes you look like a whore. No, I just wanted to say whore that way. I don't care. I'm not slut shaming. I just think like they're, you know, you think about what the stereotypical mom looked like in like the 80s. There was like that uniform kind of thing. There's like that, this is how your hair has to look. And this is what you need to dress like, to look like a well-to-do, financially stable mother figure. And now all of that can be bought from fucking like Lululemon and Athleta. And if you're selling me either of those things, I just want you to know, I'm not buying it.
You're not buying it.
I'm not. I mean, I'll look. I'll follow the link for sure.
You're going to click on it, which is why you keep seeing it, which is why.
No, because these aren't sponsored posts. These are people whose lives I just am like, wow, you're doing it, man. You are selling. Yeah. You are pumping me with consumer. Is that good? Like, you're going to go to the grave? Like, I made people want to buy things. And then I think, oh my God, that's my life.
Yes,
but from a different perspective. But no, I don't sell fucking products, though. I sell experiences. I sell the deepening of practices, Ryan. That's different.
So very different.
I just want somebody to sell me the perfect oil for my 40-year-old skin. So I'm gonna have a baby and I'm a little nervous about it, but Gabby had a dream that I gave birth in her childhood home and then chewed through the cord. I chewed through the cord on my own. So there's that.
I love this for you. I love this for you.
I don't. I think this time I'm just going to be like, hey, give me every intervention. And I hope that there are some like birth purists listening that are like, don't do it. Oxytocin. To which I'll say, you ableist fuck. You fucking ableist motherfucker. Also, what is going on with this? I'm sorry. I accidentally stumbled upon a thread about this Boston shit again, and my
question—it's never ending.
This is horse tranquilizer in laced shit. It's both boring and it's constipating me, and it's—I miss drugs, Ryan.
Is that so?
It's them sometimes, yeah. I'm sorry, what were we talking about? Where am I?
What's happening?
I have 54 plants. I've named each of them.
Oh, good times. I don't know how much I want to, how much more I want to talk about all of that malarkey. I don't think that I don't think that it's helpful at this point. Like if people have stories they want to tell that, you know, about, you know, their, you know, the fact that they had a harmful experience working somewhere, like that, they should be able to tell those stories. Like, I'm not saying don't do that, because I think people should be able to, if they want to, if they feel like it's helpful, share what their experience was of working at a studio that they ultimately chose to leave. And like, there's a really selfish part of me that is, just wants to like move on with my life. Teach some fucking yoga and call it a day. And I just feel like we've drifted away from the we may have drifted away from the point of all of this. People should go on and tell their stories. Yeah, and they should tell their stories. But every time one of these comes up, I'm like, how could I feasibly delete Facebook and Instagram? How could I just get off of these platforms entirely? And then I don't, because I have to do some considerable amount of work on both of those platforms, and it makes me sad sometimes. Whatever.
I mean, I just think it's super interesting. The only thing that has, hey, I need you to be less wonderfully protective of your mother. Thank you. Oh yes, you're brave. Brave and valiant steed. It's a child. Stop barking at the neighborhood children. Okay, yeah, and she lives here, so you can't do that. Complex. Okay, so here's what we're actually talking about. Apparently somebody that was like a part of the group that wanted to set Down Under on fire, then signed up for like some Down Under classes. And Down Under was like, hey, since this is like an ongoing legal thing, it's probably best if like you're not, you don't come to this class right now. And some people are feeling very strongly about that. And I guess my whole thing is like, why?
I mean, if
why do you wanna, why would you wanna like support the studio that is like,
I have great sympathy for that, because if someone told me that I couldn't take a class from Barbara or Patricia, like I would be fucking livid.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I would contact, I would say to the teacher, hey, you're teaching in a place that won't let me do it. And I'd like have that conversation with the teacher. And also, like, I don't know. There's like a bunch of fucking restaurants in town. Like, I only have the Brussels sprouts that are aged with the aioli from Sicily. And I won't go other way off of my
stomach. I think that's a little different than someone who has a
true
relationship with a teacher over a long period of time, and they
practice with the fucking teacher. Everybody's doing it online, and there's no, you know what I mean, tell the teacher, let that teacher like defend the situation.
I mean, I hope that,
right?
That I hope that was done. I hope that the teachers, you know.
Yeah, like if I wanted to practice with you and you were at a studio that was like, Kate, you can't, and you were like, well, Kate, you like really publicly like lambasted the place that like pays my bills, I'd be like, meh. Or I'd be like, okay, well, what other avenues can I practice with you with? You know, like I certainly, it's just so weird. And like, to me, everything about this is, it's such a fucking bougie, like I'm just like, what the Does anybody have anything better to do with their time? No? We're dying. The planet is dying. All of this is polishing the brass on the Titanic. I can't get my heated towel. They won't let me in to get my heated towel.
I'm just going to duck out of this conversation.
I'm sorry. It's, you know what it is? It's like the very thing that I think that is being complained about, it just feels like the same thing. Like everybody's just gross. I'm sorry. I do want people to tell their stories, but this, like, I mean, that kind of story is fucking weird to me. I hate Amazon, but Amazon, then after I very publicly said Amazon is terrible, I wanted to walk in and purchase goods from them. Like, talk with your money, first of all.
Well, I think that the issue is with some of those more senior teachers, they don't actually have a lot of avenues outside of Down Under for regular study. So I do hope that folks go to those more senior teachers and say, like, hey, this feels really shitty. I hope you can do something about it. Yeah, and maybe they
absolutely.
Can.
And a lot of those senior teachers are also like, yeah, I like that you do a bunch of the work for me, setting up the class and dealing with enrollment and all that admin shit. And I'm glad to be here, not dealing with that garbage. And that is the conversation that we're actually talking about, is like the senior teachers could go and do whatever the hell they want. They don't want to. So talk to them and see what they say.
And, yeah. And I bet you that folks would be let back into class. I bet you.
Yeah.
I bet you. But I think you're also responding to that type of teacher-student relationship that someone might be having. Because you have feelings about a like dedicated student-teacher relationship.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I just, the older I get, the more suspicious it is to me. And I look back over the relationships that I had and started to have with different yoga teachers. And the older I get and the more I drift away from that, the more I see how fraught with the potential for abuse is there with the dedicated relationship between the eternal student and the eternal teacher. I actually didn't see it. I did. I saw the edges, and then I saw it right in its ugly fucking epiglottis when I read that letter to what's her fucking name? The oil witch.
Elena.
Elena Brower. The letter to Elena Brower from one of her students hit me in such a personal way. Now, I have never had a relationship with a teacher who has tried to get me to sell things in a multi-level marketing scam, but there were parts of that relationship I recognized.
Yeah. I think there would, I think people would be lying if they're like, if there was nothing about that letter that felt familiar in some just even, I don't know how I'm trying to, words are not coming. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't some part of that relationship that you had experienced with another teacher, even if it wasn't the exact circumstances that the flavor was there.
Yeah. And it's this idea of a person that knows more and has something that you don't and is transfusing it. That and you only have access to it by proximity to them. And I recognize the part of me that is susceptible to that, the part of me that is, you know, that was a little girl that suffered trauma, the part of me that is, you know, a recovering addict, like all of those parts of me respond really powerfully to the comfort of the eternal teacher doling out little bits of wisdom, and maybe someday I too will be able to. No. And therein is the problem. You never arrive. You never really get to the fullness of yourself if in those types of relationships, you know? And so what we have is this infantilization, this ongoing suspended adolescence of students. And I think that's so wrong. And it's a way to cut people off from God. And I don't like it. It's like the Catholics. It's, I'm sorry, but it's like, no. You can't get to God until you come and tell the sins to the creepy old, you know, fucking closeted queen in the fucking, you don't, no, you tell me your dirty deeds.
But there is not an episode of this podcast that hasn't come back to Catholicism at some point.
Yeah, and that's why it's called Unrolled.
150 some odd episodes in.
I know, but I have to point back to the inherent religiosity and construct of power distribution that echoes true with the fundamentalist belief structures. You gonna fucking throw some incense at me and make me all woozy, make me think this is magic shit? Fuck all of you. You're all selling me snake oil.
But here's the... I find nothing wrong in the relationship of this person in a very tangible way knows more about something than I do. And so I'm going to go learn about that thing from this person. Mm-hmm. And I also, having practiced with people who have been practicing much longer than I have, there is something that is learned from the resonance of just being with another human being.
Yeah, okay. And then you practice with them for as long as they themselves have studied. And at some point, you're just practicing in the presence of somebody that's been doing it longer than you. And at what point are you just gonna like say, I am allowed, and it might be better to at this point find a different teacher or a different skill set, or like dive deeper into your own,
well,
into your own internal knowing and practice.
But that's the thing, is like I do think that a skilled teacher will point you in that direction. Like someone who is skilled at, like, it's on the onus of someone who is the teacher to be like, okay, you have a really good handle of this material teaching, and it might be helpful to go study these other things.
That's not what they do, though. They just stay forever.
Well, that's because that's the capitalistic flaw of it all.
Yeah, so then they are rewarded for not sending baby birds from the nest. And so what we have is a bunch of fucking limp-winged, starving, forever infantilized, peri-adolescent bird shrieking at the foot of the aged mother. That is my TED talk.
I was hoping that was your next tattoo.
Actually, there's this really cool thing I do want for a tattoo, and it's the pelican, the image of the pelican with three babies underneath it, and the pelican mother proudly is stabbing herself in the heart with her own feet to let the blood out to feed the babies. And it's like the it's, you know, it's sort of like the Christ self-sacrificial, like anything, because part of it was that these birds, supposedly if they couldn't get enough food, the mother birds would pierce their skin and feed their babies blood so that the babies would survive. So actually, yeah, that is a tattoo I was sort of looking at, because I just want everything to be like a Catholic fucking, I'm realizing on this, the dawn of my 40s, I do have a lot wrapped up in Catholicism, just in terms of like my response to the symbolism and how it hardwired parts of, anyways, Pelican Blood.
there's the episode title. Anyways, Pelican Blood. What were we even talking
about? I really am proud of what I did linguistically there about the baby birds.
I just want to let that land, give people a little bit of a moment to take that in.
Yeah, that was money. That was a money shot right there. Yeah, look, I think it's cool to study. I think it's cool that there are people that know a lot of stuff. I also think, like, there is a reason doctors are not in school forever, because ultimately, like, the emergency room is enough of a emergency is enough of a continuing ed program for work itself and life itself to become the teacher. And I am so suspicious of things like that encourage just a lifetime of adherence to, or attendance, really, attendance of a single teacher's class, with sort of the subtext of, you're not coming because you just enjoy it, you're coming because you haven't been exposed to the full breadth of my wisdom. And the thing that bums me out about that is a lot of these people are the people that, like, complain about lineage, and I'm so suspicious of all of it. Is suspect.
Well, I think when you say complain about lineage, complain about the falling away of lineage, or complain about the, like,
they don't, yes, both. They're either complaining about the falling away of lineage, or they're, like, openly, like, look at all the abuse happening.
Yeah.
And then they themselves are, like, participating in, you know, I don't know. There's part of me that looks and is like, oh my God, I got out. And then there's part of me that's like, did I? And have I screamed loud enough for other people to get out too? So I feel like I'm standing sort of like somewhat in safety, but also close enough to the harm source that I can yell.
But I think the element that is, like, it's twofold. So let's say you go and you study like the people who go and, like, haphazardly drop into a couple of Angar classes here and there. That's totally fine from a practitioner point of view. But from a teacher point of view, if you try to start integrating that, like, you're getting a very small, myopic piece of information. And then, like, without a lot of background, like, it is a method, say what you will about it. There are many things that I agree about it, about the Angar method, and many, many things that I don't find to be helpful. But I appreciate that it's hard for me to fully know what I'm missing from the Cliff Notes. Like, that some of the things are really legitimately not helpful for me, and some of the things are just incomplete bits of information that I've received from taking various Iyengar classes. And I have many things that I am studying, so, you know, it's not a particular priority for me to dive into that method in a deep way. But I think, you know, for those people that do, there could be, you know, if I had the full sort of a bigger understanding of what the totality of it, what is taught, then there could be some really interesting conversations. I think, you know, that doesn't necessarily map well onto other quote unquote lineages. But I think because we've gotten to this point of there being such a myriad of different approaches, the thing that's not actually being in, like, people are going and taking bits and pieces of whatever they want. That's happening. There's no stopping that. The thing that isn't actually often taught, because people are kind of in their lane of their, you know, teacher, for at least, I think for the majority of folks attending public classes, their teacher is kind of in a particular lane of thinking and lane of delivering a class. There's no one to instruct what the reflective process is, to be like, well, why do I want to straighten my leg there? What is the value of a straight leg in this situation?
Because there's not one answer to that question.
But the process of that, I'm not saying there has to be one answer to that question. It's what is the value for the person doing the practicing? And pretty quickly, if you go on that reflective process, you realize, oh, have I just been doing
what I'm told?
Triangle pose for the sake of doing triangle pose? Because there is something about learning triangle pose for the sake of learning triangle pose. But then how do you actually, where is the application of what you have learned in triangle towards actually practicing? And it's not that that isn't taught in these more sort of typical lineages. It's just that it's taught so far down the line.
And that's part of the problem, I think. I'm not saying there's something you do. You from the very beginning of a basics class, Ryan 101 is how might it feel like? So you are so tapped into that encouraging of critical thought, agency, and self-awareness for students.
And it's a much more
you give the keys to the kingdom early in the class is my point. Oh God. And
I actually couldn't tell what fell, whether it was the painting or your computer. but I guess the question I have is when like in order to change what you're talking about, I think there would need to be a pretty wholesale deconstruction of what people expect from coming to a yoga class.
Or what people expect to coming from a yoga class that is taught with a senior level teacher.
Well, I think it's across the board. I think it's, you know.
Give me access to the candy man. I need my hip. It's the only real teacher in town. Give me a hit.
Because I think what...
We're not a fucking roller skate.
But that's... So the thing is that in order to do the... Like, fundamentally, the agency conversation to me is one about, can you actually feel your own fucking body and how it moves through space? And I just happen to have a historical influence of these things we call yoga postures. And I happen to, as a person, practice yoga asana. So that is one of the main modalities in which I am teaching about the body. But had I been exposed to, I don't know, like rhythmic gymnastics or something, we might be having a different conversation.
No, we wouldn't. It would actually be the same one. I'd be like, listen, Ryan, it's time to let go of the ribbons. And you'd be like, but listen, after 20 years of practicing with these ribbons and my ribbon teacher, I have to tell you that there's still so much for me to learn about ribbon handling. And I'd be like, when are you going to let yourself fly your own ribbons, Ryan? You know, like, I think it's, I don't know. I think you and I honestly, like, agree.
Oh, yeah. No, there's...
I am hyperbolically pulling it to the end range, which is like, you know, also, I think also I'm having a very strong, like, there are teachers that have been around for a really long time that I'm sure I would enjoy myself in their classroom. And then there are, like, well-respected national teachers who I've seen firsthand, like, say really fucked up things and have left me like, ooh, well, whatever you are teaching, I don't know that I want any. And then there are teachers where I'm just suspicious based on who's in their room.
Sure.
You know, and how long they have been in your room and how they teach. Because I've taken those classes and I'm like, what are you learning in there, huh?
Yeah.
And I'm left saying to myself, okay, when I read letters about abusive power construct between student and teacher, a lot of bells go off in a way that... I narrowly missed being probably emotionally hurt by some yoga teachers. And I was really susceptible, you know, like coming in with the things I talked about earlier, like I'm like a prime freaking target for that kind of, thinking and that kind of relationship. And I don't wish to perpetrate, I don't want to participate in it. I don't want to be that type of teacher. And I realized that that's just because I'm doing my work. And like, I go to therapy and I'm pretty fucking clear on my boundaries. And I think that, you know, maybe just there's some work that could happen psychologically for a lot of yoga teachers. There's a, you know, we're just a bunch of seekers that came to the practice because they're seeking. And I think it's important to not become complacent in the well for healing. I don't know.
I had a thought. And then it went away. But to a certain extent, we are pushing up against the limits of I don't know whether to call it a culture or a system or the sort of confluence of yoga and capitalism, and how that was constructed from the early 90s onward. We're both all needing to put food on our table, and the levers that we can lean on to do that in ways that I think generally people think they are being helpful to folks. I try to be helpful to folks and to be compensated for my time. It is the whole thing is kind of ripe for mistreatment and the sort of repetition of these issues that we've seen unfolding time and time and time and time again. And I think it honestly comes down to like I really believe that everything is constructed in a way that's making this perpetuate itself from the fact that we, you know, have these studio schedules that are pretty much sort of myopically the same across, you know, you go across the country, everyone's going to have like a 5:45, 6 o'clock class. You can do a drop-in, you can do a membership, you can do blah, 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 blah. And then you can go do some workshops, then you can go do a teacher training, and then you go do a teacher training. You're sort of like left out in the dust wondering like, wait, I'm supposed to be able to teach now. And like the whole thing needs to be reimagined, or at least vastly simplified.
I guess I agree with that for sure. And I think that if I had a suspicion that what I was doing as a teacher, the tools that I was using, was causing harm, I'd throw it out in a heartbeat. Because there is nothing like ahimsa, non-harming, non-violence, like in the classroom and in life. Like it feels to me like people are not willing to let go of things that are harmful and that are hurting other people. And I mean that from the point of view of teachers and teacher trainers and studios and lineages. It's like, you know, in a medical community, the second, you know, something causes harm, you know, you take the fucking drug off the market, God willing. This is a terrible analogy because they don't always do that. But, you know, the Hippocratic Oath, like.
Sure. I think part of the, I have certainly been the recipient of a significant harm in the classroom, but looking back on other times where I've been in the classroom and been harmed, but maybe in a way that not everyone would have been aware of, I think, and I'm trying to think of like an example, like, I don't know, like someone says something to you about your body that there's no, or how they said it, and there was no earthly way that they could have possibly known that would have triggered a whole litany of whatever in your psyche. I don't think it's always the onus on the, like, I don't always feel resourced or haven't felt resourced. I don't really go to classes. I just roll around on my floor behind me. but in situations like that, And it's hard to tell like whether this is on me or whether it's on the teacher, or like I just never felt particularly resourced or invested to go up to that human being and say like, hey, that was kind of fucked up what you said to me. Like, this is how I perceived what you said to me.
This is how that was received.
This is how that was received. And I think there's a lot of talk on those big, like, traumatic moments that occur in the classroom. You know, an adjustment that goes horribly wrong. You know, blatant, sexual abuse in the context of a class, one time or over a long period of time. Like, these are things that we hear about. And there's also the harm that's done in the sort of I guess as a like blanket term, like coercion and, you know, sort of psychosocial harm that can be done in the context of a spiritual or yoga community, whether you want to think of your yoga community as spiritual is a whole other
or a community.
Yeah. Or a community for that matter. So I think there's like, you know, we examine these harms in these very reactive ways. Like a story about this comes out, we talk and we think about this. A story about that comes out, we talk and we think about that. A story about that comes out, we talk and we think about that. And how do, like, I would be interested in trying to examine further into, okay, I think we could all agree that there is no such thing as a perfectly safe group class experience.
Okay, yes.
I think we can all agree that that's really not possible. And beyond that, are there things, are there sort of elements of, you know, even down to the minutia of like how and where the teacher sits in the classroom to, you know, like the fact that yoga rooms look a certain way to like these, like the actual construction of this yoga world that has been slightly deconstructed just by the Zoom machine, of course. But like, where is there potential for harm? Not in a way that's like, you never, ever, ever, ever do that, or you never, ever, ever do that. It's just like, can we be aware of where all of the things where there is potential for harm, discomfort, othering, you know, even just making someone feel uncomfortable in their existence? Because like, we're, you know, and I say that sort of cautiously because there are times where yoga has, there are many, many times where yoga has been a very, very effective tool in getting very, very up close and personal with being very deeply, deeply, deeply uncomfortable with certain elements of reality. And usually it's better if those things are not directly prompted by another human being. if the suggestion that facing discomfort is a choice that one could choose to do here, and then the person maybe many, many years down the line decides that, okay, this is a skill that is helping me to face the discomfort of existence, then yes, great. So I'm not, again, it's not about making a perfectly safe, sterile environment, but it's up to the teachers and the studio owners and everybody to be like, okay, where are the potentials for harm? Which is not to say who is to blame for having caused harm over the years, because if that's the focus of the conversation, amongst teachers, obviously that can be a big focus of the conversation in a broader way, then it's we're going to shut ourselves off to some things that might be uncomfortable for us to kind of throw out the window. That was a very long-winded way of getting to that point. Like, yeah, they're going to be, if we really sat down and thought about it and really sat down and talked to that, I am sure that some of us would come to the conclusion that, you know, this thing that I do that I've always done that I kind of really liked, I don't think it's actually helpful.
Or the cost-benefit analysis is such that I will bring it to the garage for some tinkering.
Yes. Or it needs to be contextualized differently, or it needs to be like,
which requires so much willingness to be wrong. And everybody's so freaking like fragile with their, because nobody feels like they belong teaching. First of all, everybody feels it's like fucking, everybody feels like a fraud. So then they have to like double down on defending whatever bullshit they're doing because they're so fragile.
And and it would require a significant amount of time, which is something that studio owners, teachers, we just don't have. Because if this is how we've chosen to make our living, even partially, there's no time.
Oh, that part. Yeah, there's some truth there.
And then, you know, I think the danger of like, and then you get into all of these tricky territories, especially as a studio owner. Like, I remember wanting to have some of these bigger conversations, and I was like, fuck, I can't like compensate any of these people for their time on this. And like, there were times where people came together and we had some of these conversations, which I was really grateful for. But it's one of those things where you really do need a lot of voices in the room, because otherwise, whatever the sort of like collective like convergence of privilege in the room will 100% win the day in terms of the conclusions.
Gravity will go toward comfort.
Yeah.
So I'm getting winded just from holding my body up. Somebody send me a shitty email about something I should be doing differently during this pregnancy to really feel the light of God come through. Stay angry. That's my call to action.
That's gonna, I think, when you eventually make yourself a new website, or when I make you a new website one day.
So bad. I know.
I just want the big, I want the big CTA in the banner to just say, stay angry.
Yeah. And anger is, when it is not cruel, it can be productive.
Yeah.
It can be and here's the thing, like, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
So love to hear from you. I always love the texts and Instagram things. If you have anything you want us to cover, or
I feel like people are scared to send me texts and Instagram things.
Don't be scared.
I'm sorry.
Crackers and cheese.
And yeah. Bye.
Bye.
That was a weird one.
That was super weird.
Do you want to try it again?
Okay, here we go.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Okay, we're done now.